Hi, everyone. I'm Carolyn Elliott.
And I'm Layla Bernard.
And we are here with our wonderful friend,
Luis Mojica.
And you're listening to the Sleepover podcast. We are actually super, super hashtag blessed this morning. We're sitting in a beautiful house in upstate New York overlooking a gorgeous lake and mountains. And we are on the Sunday morning of the third immersion for this round of Sleepover Mystery School. And Luis is a genius somatic therapist and teacher who's here to help us somatically integrate the experience of our mystery initiation that we did yesterday. And so we also have the great, wonderful pleasure of hanging out and talking with him while he's here. So we were just starting to talk about, you know, our witchy love for Jesus. And I was like, we should record a podcast because it's something that I, you know, I've written emails about and I've talked about sporadically, but people, you know, I don't know, it could always be said more. So you were having a little mind inspiration about it, Luis. Do you want to return to what that was? I think you were saying one of the reasons you like us.
We marry the witch to the Christ.
It is. It's what initially my wife was drawn to you first, and she was like talking about your work a lot. And then I listened to something, and you were saying something about Jesus being your favorite witch, or the witch, or something like that.
Queer witch Jesus.
Yeah, and I used to refer to it as Rainbow Jesus, because, and not like in the corporate sense of pride, but in the way of literally everything is in that body of Christ. And I grew up Catholic, so when you're, and I grew up in a private Catholic school, so when you grow up in a private,
I went to Catholic church and Catholic CCD.
Okay, so you have some sense
of it. Not as hardcore as Catholic school, though.
Catholic school is hardcore because you actually have, every day you have a class, which is Mass. So you have like an 8-hour school day. It's from kindergarten to 12, and 1 hour of that school day is in church, praying and repenting. And I just remember sitting in that church, being bathed in the frankincense and the beautiful rainbow, you know, stained glass and the light shining on my face. And I would just be completely enamored by Christ's body and face. And it was so womanly and so manly and so other to me that I just had this kind of intimate relationship with him growing up the whole time. I never took in the concepts of Catholicism, though. They never penetrated me. I was just loving the visual of it all, and, like, the ritual of it all.
Yeah.
Right, so when I found Wicca, it was kind of obvious, the origins of the Catholic rituals, and it just all made sense. But I wanted to riff with y'all not even Christ as a being, which is excellent, but, like, the concept of Christ. Like, where does that go when it comes to Wicca?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, I never remember the names of the books that I've read or the authors of the words that I've read, but I've definitely, you know, heard people speak about, like, the evolution of human consciousness is for each individual human being to realize that they are identical with the Christ and to embody and, like, carry that and evoke that in themselves. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's such a sort of, heretical idea compared to what is taught. You know, I remember having a conversation with my super evangelical family members after myself having gotten involved with, like, the Friends, and spending a lot of time in silent worship and contemplation and drawing closer to the Holy Spirit, basically, and being like, oh, great, finally I have something to, like, talk about with these family members. Like, let's riff on how much we love Jesus. And I remember just, like, very innocently saying to them, like, I just love asking myself, how can I more and more every day be like Jesus? And they were like, blasphemy, you will never be like the Christ, you will never be like him, you are a flawed, sinful human, and he was something special. And I was like, wow, that is not the message that I actually heard.
That is not what
man says, right, in the book of Acts. He's like, ye are gods and ye shall do greater works than I. That's what he says.
And so there's it is heretical to mainstream Christianity to, like, assume that one could carry within oneself the same, you know, sacred heart And I mean, to me, like, I really carry the Christ frequency as the sacred heart, the like heart on fire, the Tonglen heart that just says, like, I will experience it for everyone, and I will transmute it into love, and I will turn it into that. I will do that for everyone because I can and I will. Mm-hmm. And I just really love thinking of Christ as a frequency of being, not as a person. Like, we all could be, any person could be in that frequency.
It's like Christ entirely is a way of being, not a person.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's important. I love how you said that piece too about how it was blasphemous, because I forgot that was part of the experience with me too.
Yeah.
Because when you would go up there and they would say body of Christ, and they would hand you that wafer, it would, like, melt in my mouth. Like, I took that seriously.
Oh, my God.
I was like, I'm invoking his body. Like, how intimate is it? I'm swallowing his body.
I'm like, I know. Well, I love going to Mass.
Homoerotic. I thought it was incredible.
I love going to Mass. I love the ritual of, like, Catholic or Episcopalian, like, really ritualistic liturgical Mass. And just being like, we are doing the vampiric rites now. Like, it's such a kinky, weird vampire phase.
Drinking
the blood, eating the blood. Yeah, I know, it's monstrous so and bizarre.
I know, and I think that's why I think it's important that we say about Christ as a frequency. Because when Christ becomes a being, it's immediately, that's the moment we're separated.
Yeah.
Like, that's the moment that the organized religion, as people come to hate it, is born. Mm-hmm. There's a separation. When it's a frequency, it's like already in your bones. It's just, are you able to feel it or not?
Absolutely, it is. And I guess I was just thinking, like, somebody, you know, like, I would talk about queer witch Jesus. These days, I think more in terms of magician Jesus. But, like, somebody asked me, like, could you explain that, why you're calling Jesus a queer witch? And I'm like, well, I don't know what dude's sexuality was. He did seem very intimate with 12 dudes. But, you know, but I can say that he was queer in the sense of, you know, he certainly did not obey any conventions.
That's
like,
right.
And talk
That's
about right. non-binary. He was simultaneously completely human and completely God.
That's right.
That's the big non-binary. And
switch.
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, he was like, another big boundary that he was blurring was like this idea of scarcity or limitation. Like, everywhere he went, he was like, oh, there's no more wine, let's turn this water into wine. Oh, you don't think there's enough food, here's all these loaves and fishes. Like, he was always keeping the party going, and always showing people that this, I mean, my conception of Jesus and of somebody who, like, fully attains Christ consciousness in general, is somebody who becomes completely lucid within this level of the dream.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in a lucid dream at night, as many people have had the experience, you know, you can change things around. You can turn a flower from pink to blue. You can fly. You can make things happen. And I truly believe that he was just so lucid in, like, realizing himself as a dream character in this reality, that he was able to just change things.
Yes.
Because he had every cell of his body, like, understood and was inhabiting the frequency of, I'm completely lucid here. I know who I truly am. I know that I'm, like, the, you know, the creative divinity that animates all of this.
Yes.
So there's no limits. There's no...
See, that to me, that's what queerness actually is.
Yeah.
Like, what you're saying, that really lights me up.
Yeah. Do you want to say a little bit about your own background understanding of that for people who are not familiar with you?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I'm like the poster boy for queerness, and you wouldn't know it. Oh, maybe you would, but you wouldn't know it to look at me. But I was born intersex, so, like, the male and female lives in me biologically. And for me, what that meant was sex hormones. My estrogen was dominating my body until I was 15. And then my body magically started making testosterone, like, no idea why. And so I had breasts, I had hips, I had top surgery. Like, I went through a whole physical transformation of living in an actual biology that was ambiguous. And not just, you know, mine, but it was like the manifest of all the frequencies. Like, male, female is the easy way to put it, but we can say all the frequencies. Puerto Rican, Irish family, bisexual, like, so many convergences within this body. And so when you were talking and you were saying, you know, queer witch Jesus, and I was thinking of my own experience, that's why I relate and related to him so much in my life, because just how you said it's probably the only like magical deity that Christianity really has, or Catholicism really has. This sky
Mary's
god.
Mary's a deity.
No, I mean like other indigenous cultures and Eastern religions, they have these like creatures, I'm going to call them, right?
Uh-huh.
That are not human, like myths and such.
Yeah.
Like Jesus isn't human, and he is, right? He's like literally plucked from whatever god divinity, and he's in a body. And to me, that's a really beautiful, like you said, non-binary. It's a really beautiful, like ancient way before technology took over and we could be more modern with this. An ancient way to understand truly like non-binary and all the frequencies living in your body and queerness. I mean, how queer is it for a sky god to put his seed in a woman's body? I mean, that's like so far out.
Interspecies, interdimensional.
That's what I'm saying. It's transspecial.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like
reality.
It's incredible. And so that's what lights me up the most, because I know the felt sense of living with the many dimensions biologically. And how Jesus is that manifestation of all the dimensions coming through a body, like the invocation of many different realms. So when you were saying about, you know, the lucidity of this realm, right, which I really appreciated, it's why I love the work that I do, because somatic work is all about how do I feel this realm and how do I marry it with spirit? Jesus is the manifestation of spirit and earth being married. That's what Jesus is. And I think that's why we're all attracted to him. And your people and like mine growing up, I said like, how dare you? You'll never be that. It's almost like this internalized, you know, hateism of being human.
Right.
And seeing yourself not able to be that multidimensional. That's where I go with that.
Yeah. And that's what I see as like the fundamental, like, you know, tragedy and like really twisting things around that the conventional church did, that imperial Christianity did. Because they basically made Jesus into like a, you know, sort of like a deified Caesar. It's like, you're never going to be Caesar. Mm. You're never going to be the great emperor in charge guy. So shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
But that was completely the opposite of what he was actually teaching and trying to demonstrate to people. And, you know, obviously, like, the way that he was such a healing, miraculous presence had to do with him seeing everybody as absolutely innocent and absolutely wonderful and powerful as he himself was, knew himself to be. And I feel like that is the strong invitation that I perceive from his life and message is, you know, everybody go ahead and inhabit this as fully as you can. And something that is interesting to me, well, and I guess just sad, well, I feel like I could talk a whole lot about it, but like I've actually meditated a whole lot on the crucifixion and the resurrection as a kind of actual turning point in human history, in human time. Like, interestingly, the bodhisattva ideal in Buddhism didn't arise until after the death and resurrection of Christ. Mm-hmm. So one could even almost say that there was something about that action that, like, truly brought something new to human consciousness that had not been in the air before, this sort of, there, instead of like private enlightenment or private travels in the underworld and spirit power, like instead a sort of very public, very shared, unifying, altruistic action.
I love to think about Jesus as just like such a heretical initiate, because the rite of initiation that, you know, the story of Christ represents is a like very ancient initiation, you know,
yeah,
like Ra, like Osiris, like all like Odin, like these are all there. It's all the same story of like the god falling into the underworld, which is here, and then like remembering themselves and like returning to union with like the previous place. And I just think about like Jesus and his friends. Like I love to think about Jesus and his friends too. Like I don't even really think about Christ in isolation. I think about him with his like hot, sexy whore girlfriend Mary and his like bad friend Judas and like all of his pals being like, you know what we're gonna do? We were all sworn to secrecy in these mystery initiations that we went through. But you know what? Fuck that. Like, everybody needs to know. Like, we can't just be waiting for people to stumble into the mystery school and meet the requirements for, like, these people's rules. Like, we were talking earlier about the, you know, the prohibitions of, like, you know, even modern initiatory orders. Like, don't speak about this. Don't rebel against the order. And they were like, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to put on the show in front of everybody. Everybody's going to see the secret initiatory rite. And, like, by doing that, it, like, suffused hundreds of thousands of people with the, like, with the poetry of that initiatory thing. It, like, unveiled the mystery. And it's wonderful, too, because, like, you can't see it unless you can see it. Like, you can completely misinterpret what happened, or you can be like, whoa, that's what's happening to all of us all the time. That is who we are.
When you said everybody, that was the important part to me. Like, to me, that's what makes Jesus and the frequency so queer, is it's a true non-binary of thought. And so it's everybody. It's everybody. There isn't one person that doesn't deserve this experience.
Yes.
And I think that's what's so radical, that's always been radical, after the experience of Christ, after the death, or whatever you want to call it, the resurrection. That's what makes it so radical, is because in modern day we have this spell of thinking someone's more deserving than someone else of this compassion, openness, penetration of love, like whatever it is. And this is where trash comes in. This is where filth culture comes in for me. Like, when I think of you, when you're saying that, he's like, with all his friends, you know, we know this thing, like, we know these practices. Like, why are we waiting for people to come in and go through all this and do them exclusively? Let's just go out into the world. I, like, see them going and, like, kissing lepers.
Yeah.
And, like, eating with prostitutes. And I'm like, that's John Waters. Like, that's the celebration of filth, you know, of, like, divine eating dog shit.
Yeah.
And, like, transmuting it into this extremely hysterical experience. And I guess to me, that's the part that gets lost when we think about, like, piety.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I think about, I mean, we were talking about the prostitutes and the lepers. I think about the tax collectors, too. The Roman tax collectors were, like, robbing and beating the Jewish people constantly. They were, like, mobster, gangster, terrifying people. And Jesus was, like, buddy-buddy with them. He was, like, hanging out with them. So, of course, everybody was like, what the fuck, dude?
Yes.
You're, like, hanging out with these gangsters that are starving us? Like, what? And he's like, yeah, they're cool, you know?
I mean, that's why I love Jesus. Like, because those were the parts I really attached to growing up, and all the stories were, like, him being with these people that everyone hated for whatever reason. And, you know, we were saying before recording, you know, what's it like to hold that state where you're on the cross, people are watching you, they're smiling while you're suffering, and you're just looking at them with total admiration. Like how big does that have to be inside of you? And that's, again, where the body comes in for me. Because when you're talking about, like, famine, and then here's loaves of bread, I see that as the somatic practice of attunement and orienting, which is this thing that happens. And, like, the biggest spell is having a body, right? Because all these sensations make you believe it's really happening. But most of it's hallucinogenic. So if I'm sitting here with you and, like, that plant is totally dead, and that's what my body's feeling, that dead plant. Like, my body attunes to the deadness of the plant, which isn't even inherently bad, right? But then there's a whole other layer of, like, dead's bad, you know, all these things. That I don't even see this, like, vibrant pansy here, like, waving to me. So my body's, like, shut off to the world around me. It's, like, this narrow experience of this one thing I'm orienting to. When I think of Jesus, I imagine this being or this frequency that was literally able to constantly reattune to everything. It didn't get stuck anywhere. It was like a fluidity. And so the fluidity is also part of the queerness to me, right? Of not just believing in one binary or one situation.
Yeah, absolutely. We're being joined by our friend Amajean, who's an initiate in our mystery school. Yeah,
welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Giving hugs.
Yeah. I missed our meeting the other day because I was here doing a ritual for them.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're recording a podcast right now. You're welcome to join us, or if you want to grab Lulu. Amajean is being so kind and babysitting Lulu today while we finish the immersion. Lulu, wait one second. You guys keep talking.
Yeah, go for it. So what do you think about that fluidity? Where does that go for you?
Oh,
like,
well,
To not get stuck,
I mean, I think about... I don't know. I'm having a, like, riff on thought about how, like, I personally think about I personally think about the story of like Lucifer and Christ as being continuations of each other. So like there's this being, this like favorite, beloved first angel of God, son of God, who's Lucifer, who's like, I don't like the way you're doing this. Mm-hmm. I hate this. You're ruling the universe wrong. And like, I don't like it. And so God is like, all right, wonderful. You want to do better? Go. And is like cast out of heaven, like cast out into the underworld, into the other place, which, you know, seems to be where we're living. And like this being has to go through the like trials of this world and like can fight against it and like be full of rage and hate and attuned to the dead plant and attuned to like the ugliness and attuned to the violence and be like, no, 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 this shouldn't be happening. But like slowly that, like the exhaustion of that and like the trauma of that and the like no and constriction of that, like you can get pretty dense.
Yes.
You can get very dense in that. Yes. But eventually it becomes too much even for your body to hold all of the no, and it starts to like crack open and you start to have to be like, okay, well, in order to like function, I have to let go of some of this no. And then you start to like feel better and you've got like less no and less and less no and less and less no, until suddenly, or you know, over lifetimes or eons or mythological time, you like open up into like the total yes of like, it is perfect, it is wonderful, it is all fine, it is okay. Okay, and you've become Christ, and like
you literally just expressed how I experienced trauma healing.
Yeah,
you know, because it's so clinical in our society, trauma.
Yeah,
but it's exactly what you just said. It's like my body is attuned to all the no.
Yeah,
like I got raped 20 years ago.
Yeah,
my body's still attuned to that 20 years later. That's what trauma is. It's like it's a nervous system attunement to the horror. And then from that past horror you experience, an attunement to all present horror that you can't attune to anything else.
Right.
But when that no builds up so much, it literally cracks you. It breaks you down.
Yeah.
And some people breaks them down into mental illness. Others, it breaks you open into what you're saying about, like, the yes.
Yeah.
How can I transmute this instead of, like, resisting it?
Yeah. And, I mean, I wrote an essay several years ago that was, like, suffering is worthless. With the caveat that, like, in and of itself, like, the story that causes you to suffer, like, really doesn't have any value unless it pushes you, like, further up the shore, away from it, like, into seeking the light. Like, it, like, the purpose of the pain is to be, like, just like all pain, is to be, like, move away, move away, move away, go away. And with, like, trauma stories, you can hear how, like, well, the event, I've heard wise teachers say, like, well, you, like, the event is no longer happening. Like, that's over. So the thing that's causing the re-traumatization is the story. So it's the story of no. It's the story of this shouldn't be that we need to move away from because it's causing pain. And when you train your mind to, and your body, to, like, move away from the story that is causing pain, well, we're meaning makers. We tell stories. So you have to tell a different and new story that, like, includes forgiveness and includes grace and includes acceptance and includes reconciliation. And, like, then you're doing the Christ thing.
Well, what, like, you just said, though, is so spot on, because the whole purpose of trauma is to move you.
Yeah.
And so, like, when we're talking about the fluidity with Christ and attunement, the immobility,
right?
That's what's so not queer to me.
Right.
Like, if I think of someone who's square, like, that idea, like, they're so square, like, it's a square.
It can't roll.
Yeah, it doesn't move. It's immobile. It's confined. And so I really like that you brought that in, because trauma is divine electrocution. That's all it is. It's like this electricity from the cosmos. The whole of the universe comes through your nervous system. That is, I mean, is that not divine, like, Immaculate Conception?
Right. Yeah.
And so it's like, when that comes in, you are meant to move that. Like you said, it's supposed to propel you toward, like, something even sweeter and more divine. Yet being traumatized, it propels you into more hell, and you keep reliving it. Right.
So that's what so this is the piece that I've been really meditating about, is, like, thinking about, you know, Jesus 2,000 years ago, crucifying himself, doing this crazy mystery ritual, making it public, just fuck it, come on, let's do it.
And we're not even gonna do it as a symbol. We're gonna do, well, I'm a symbol, so we're gonna do it symbolically, but like,
yeah, very intensely, very vivid. And so then it happens, and of course, then what happens after that is, oh,
Fascinating. Here in Malkuth, in the material plane, there's even more misery and strife stirred up by, you know, the Imperial Christianity and all of these people that are, like, you know, persecuted and tortured, and the Inquisition and the witch burnings and the tragedies of the Catholic Church abusing children and all these horrible orphanages and terrible things. Anyways, all of these terrible horrors that happened that, like, ripple out from this central mandala place, and I guess rippled into the past before it also. And I, and like you were just talking about, Luis, like that trauma being this like divine electrifying influx. And I truly, like, I used to really, and I think everybody who's interested in Jesus and feels attracted to him has to wrestle with the history of the church and all of those horrors and abuses. And the place that I came to it with is, like, I feel like at some level he understood that that was part of the deal, that he wasn't just crucifying himself, that he was that he was like taking everybody with him deeper into the crucifixion, into the hell realms, into the singularity. And that we've all, there's this really fascinating, like, rune book that David has, that talks about, like, the intersection of, like, the Odin and the Jesus myths. But this notion that, like, if for the past 2,000 years, we've all been hanging on the cross, like, all of humanity has been in this long adolescence, which essentially is being tortured. We're just torturing each other, you know, all of these various imperial invasions and slaveries and I guess, you know, previous, even going back further than 2,000 years, we've been being way uncool to each other. And a way in which, like, the resurrection, the second coming of Christ, is when we are like, you know what? I think we get it. I think that's enough. I think we've had enough encounters with this, like, super intense trauma, hurting each other energy, that we've realized that it's not personal, that it's something that is just happening, that's moving through all of us. We don't have to stay mad and keep repeating it. We could let it go. We could integrate it. We could heal it. We could recognize that it's part of us. It's part of the universe, and come into a different level of relationship with it, a different felt bodily relationship, and stop recoiling and stop, like, shutting ourselves down and shutting ourselves off. And, and realizing our, like, we've been talking about this, the collective unconscious becoming the collective conscious. I feel like what keeps us unconscious is, like, that will to blame. That's and that right. will.
No, you're bad. I think this whole conversation is making me think about Richard, you know, because we're huge fans of Richard Rudd and the Gene Keys and, you know, his, like, frequencies. And he talks in there, there's, has particularly touched me, he talks about there's, like, a huge mutation happening in people right now around the ganglia around the heart, like the intelligence and the nervous, like, there's more neuronal energy in the, like, cardiac system than, like, in the brain, like, and that part of us is, like, evolving right now to become more intelligent and more sensitive and more a part of our consciousness. I think there's no coincidence that, like, you know, like, the center of the cross is behind Jesus's heart. Like, the sacred heart is one of the symbols, and in, like, you know, the tree of life, Tifereth, the fallen god sphere of, like, marrying the divine with the earthly, is centered in the body's heart. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really where that kind of awareness lives. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about, is, like, instead of reacting to all of these horrors and the people who perpetrate them with, like, no, I'm closing. Right. No, you don't get to be in here. Like, the heart starts to be like, well, does this work? Does this feel good? Like, actually, I'm constricted when I feel that way. And, like, I actually can forgive and, like, give grace and, like, mercy, and that, like, awakens the heart and causes a mutation in people.
Well, this is important because what you're both saying is so the way I like to teach, because even if you think of forgiveness through a somatic lens, like the way you were saying recoil, like, recoil is literally the physiology of, you know, what are we not, what's the, what would you say the opposite of forgiveness is?
Blame.
Let's
blame. Suffering.
Holding on. Okay.
Let's say holding on.
Yeah.
So it's like if I'm holding on, literally the physiology of the body has to recoil to hold something. Mm-hmm. And it has to like open and unfurl to release something. I think forgiveness has been such a heady concept. That's why it doesn't work, because we want to forgive, or like we think we're forgiving, but the body's still doing this. Where it happens exactly like you're saying, you have to feel that electricity and then feel the transmuting of it. Like, I thought of when I watched the, what happened on January 6th. I don't even know what these things are called.
They call it the insurrection.
Okay. Insurrection. The resurrection. I remember watching it, and I remember, like, feeling my heart opening when I saw these, like, men, like, running and beating people and breaking glass. Because I was like, you know, if that was a 2 or 3 year old hitting my legs, you know, wanting something, having a tantrum, I wouldn't be like recoiling. Like, why does it have to be different? And it was this real Christ-like moment of many I've gotten to experience because of this practice we're talking about, of seeing something that my body has been trained to recoil against, noticing it's recoiling, and then feeling like the pleasure. This is what EK is so great with. The pleasure that comes that actually transmutes what's being recoiled.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it so hard to do everything we discuss in the world. Because we have bodies, this was virtual or this was just mental, we'd be there like this. But the body is very slow, and the body is not always in union with the mind. Right. Yeah. And so I think it's just on this Jesus theme, again, divine sky and Mother Earth kind of coming together. I see it as the same way. It's like what I see, what I'm programmed, what my blame is with you, how that feels, and then what part of me can actually open to you without the binary.
Yeah, I feel like something really interesting that Layla and I have been learning from Dr. Robert is the way that the mind's representations that can be like out of awareness, that can be like so fast and so subtle that the mind doesn't even realize it's doing it. But like the way that I represent something or somebody to myself will create like a painful contraction or an expansive opening. And, you know, the methods that he's taught us are like really effective for like altering those mental representations, basically like sights, sounds, smells, kinesthetic memories and anticipations from all the senses is basically how the mind does the things it does. So like if I am, like for example, this is something I've worked with a lot. Like I'll get into a fight with my husband and like his face will just be like doing something at some particular point in that exchange that I just like, you know, really bothers me. And like for days afterwards, like he'll be sweet. He will have apologized. He will have like made amends and like everything will be different, but I'll like look at him and then I'll see his like demon face. And then I'll be like, ew, I don't like you. And like, I will recoil even though, you know,
that's not even happening
anymore. And the thing has been addressed and talked. And so like one of the things that I really have learned from Dr. Robert is how to change that representation in my mind. So like I'm not seeing the mean argument face David. I'm seeing like the sweet, loving David that he is 99.9% of the time, and like focusing on that. And I do think there is perhaps something evolutionarily where like the mind tunes in, like selects the scariest, most negative things and like replays that over and over as some sort of like vigilance, you know, defense mechanism.
There's a whole theory of that. It's called overcoupling.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk with you more about that because it's fascinating and I'm sure I have way more to learn about it. But yeah, so just I'm excited about the spreading of that, because when I hear you talk about how, you know, you were watching the January 6th stuff and like immediately like your heart opened and you were like able to perceive like these dudes having a tantrum instead of as like scary, bad, dangerous, as like, oh, they're mad, you know, and, exactly, you know, and love them like a 2-year-old, like that. I feel like you're representing them to yourself in this loving, true way, which is like, isn't it true that we are all little babies having tantrums? That's all it is. Like all we are.
That's all it is.
Yeah. And how cute we all are. So, yeah. What was the piece?
This is where people get... This is where the binary comes in. Mm-hmm. This is where the spell comes in with the body and what you were saying with the mind. Because when someone hears that, they immediately think, where's accountability? They immediately think, now I'm going to be a doormat. Like, they immediately think, like, okay, now I think it's cute when someone's abusing me. No, thank you. I'm out of here. And it couldn't be farther. What's so interesting, and I know this from clinical work, being in private practice, the people who are in abusive relationships, so when I was talking about overcouplings are exactly what you're talking about. It's, like, the somatic meaning of a situation that now gets, like, toned onto it, like, indiscriminately guaranteed. So, like, there's your husband making a mean face, demon face. He's making demon face. You feel it in your body, like, ruptures through you. Your body has now overcoupled him with demon face. It does this. It's like a primitive survival mechanism for, like, not walking into fire and not falling off cliffs, right? Like, you go to the edge of the cliff and that thing happens. It's an overcoupling because your ancestor fell off and died. So it had, like, really good roots, but relationally, it's pretty fucked up. It works better geographically than it does with people because we're so changing, whereas a cliff is a cliff usually. So I'm saying all that because... when we go into this place of learning about overcouplings, we go into what you were saying earlier, the alchemy of meaning making and meaning remaking. And so all an overcoupling is a somatic meaning. You equal this. So if you hear me say, like, January 6th people, if they equaled horrible people to me, which maybe for a second they did, I noticed that because I recoiled. What are they also? They're also scared. They're also mentally ill, some of them. They're also, like, fathers. They're also, like, beautiful people to their lovers. Like, there's so much that they are. When I could attune to that, it was like a new overcoupling came in. And that's what transmutes these horrors that get us stuck in this kind of binary code of the human experience, is the overcoupling that makes me brace against you has now completely transformed because a new one comes in that opens me. And you can't release that electricity of hate against someone unless something opens inside.
Yes. Yes. Well, this is making me want to sort of somewhat selfishly inquire about something that I saw you post on Instagram, which is you were talking about when a person has overcoupled their sexuality with, like, shame and secrecy or humiliation or abusiveness and... I guess that would be, because I feel like I definitely have that, and I've been, like, coming up against the edges of, like, how do I work with this? Like, I'm sort of over this now. Like, this isn't fun anymore. Totally. Like, I want to, like, I would like to have, like, a very direct, more somewhat wholesome access to my sexuality without the childhood overlay on it. And so I'm curious to hear you speak about, like, how does one disentangle that overcoupling?
I mean, I first of all relate so much with that. You know, that's why I posted that too. Because when people, those of you listening, the people who, when your body's developing what turns you on, even what doesn't turn you on, like for me, I was raped a few times, right? There was turn on in that. There was, like, in addition to the violation and the fear and the shame, was also, I belong. Like, someone's touching me, or, like, do they like me? You know, there's also that we tend to lose in our, again, the binary. And so as we're developing, these overcouplings develop. So my sexuality as well was like, oh, being violated feels good. My sexuality was also like, oh, being secretive, like giving like a wink to someone across the room, like go fucking in an alley. You know, like all these things became the way my, like the medium that my turn-on was allowed to come through. What's interesting is if we're not aware of that, if we're not like co-creating with that, it becomes possession, right? It's like this wound actually possesses you and it's the only way you can be turned on.
It's like compulsive.
It's compulsive. It's like when we think of it, even addiction, it's like you're now possessed by this energy that's actually super limited. It's not a liberation, even though in a lot of like kink circles we call it it's not liberation. It's liberation when I'm co-creating with it, when I can also go another direction.
Yeah, when there's flexibility.
When there's flexibility. Yeah. And for me, there wasn't for so long. And I had that same feeling of like, I'm over this. This is like getting kind of stale. And I feel like it's encapsulating me instead of expanding me. So the practice of uncoupling something like that is my favorite somatic practice, which is pendulation. And it's a practice where, like, I'll give everyone a really simple visual. Okay, think of something that really annoyed you. Tell me what it is. If you want to.
Let's see, that really annoyed me. Hold on. I do have to reach a little bit farther.
Go ahead.
I am sort of
you
like,
too.
Okay. Just this morning, David and I had went to bed kind of late, and Lulu had been with babysitters, and so she woke up pretty early, and I was still tired, and she was, like, pouting that she wanted to get out of bed and, like, kicking me, and I was annoyed.
So. Okay, where do you feel the annoyance when you think of her kicking you?
It was kind of like a heaviness in my chest, mm-hmm. and maybe like a tension in my head.
Okay, so just staying with that, one way overcoupling show themselves to us is always through constriction, mm-hmm. like a traumatic or negative one, mm-hmm. let's say. So you feel that in your head and your chest. Now, when you also think of her kicking you right now, where don't you feel that? What part of you feels something totally different?
Yeah, I don't feel it in my butt or my feet or my thighs or my lower back.
So let's do the butt, feet, thighs, just, okay. like, lower body.
Yeah.
And literally, like, a pendulum. Like, feel, like, breathe up into the part that's annoyed when you think of her. And just sit with that for a couple seconds. Yeah. And then go down to the parts that weren't and sit with those for a couple seconds. And go back up to the parts that were. And again, sit with those for a few seconds. Yeah, good. Any movement that emerges. And then go down to the parts that weren't and sit with those again. And after a few seconds, just kind of pull yourself out from your body and just look at your body as a whole and see what is it doing with this information? What's happening?
Yeah, there's definitely a relaxation when I focus on the part that was not annoyed. And there's like, I can feel how the relaxation starts to merge with the annoyed tensor.
That's the key right there, yeah. The word merge.
Yeah.
So that internal merging is like when Christ goes into the alley with the prostitutes, he merges with them.
Yeah.
Like that, those parts get to be together now.
Yeah. Well, so I think I've understood. So I've had the great blessing of working with you to do the pendulation on other things like anxiety and like, I guess I couldn't figure out how to do it directly with the sex stuff.
Well, I didn't go there yet.
Okay.
I just wanted people listening to understand
yes,
like
the process. Yeah,
so the fundamentals, what you just did, which is like everything lives in me. So we were talking about attunement earlier with the dead flower or whatever. It's like with suffering, I'm only feeling the suffering in me. I'm not feeling the other parts. So the first step for anyone listening is like you have to learn how to pendulate between all the parts.
Mm.
And that's how you become multidimensional somatically, mm-hmm. not just like mentally or spiritually. That's step one. Now, the second one is noticing what is the, like, do you want to share an experience?
Sure, I'll share an experience. Well, so like the thing that I'm struggling with, oh boy, so it's like, it does go into like deep, dark corners of my childhood because my father, in addition to molesting me, was a pornography addict.
Mm.
And I saw his pornography collection like when I was pretty young and it affected me a lot. And I think a lot of my sexuality became like geared towards and constellated around that. And so sometimes, well, pretty
I'm
much,
actually going to pause you right yeah. there. How do you feel when you even say that out loud? What happened?
I feel like there is still shame with it, and
where?
There is still like.
Let's take your time with it. That's all the information you need.
Yeah.
Right,
it does seem like it is in like the upper part of my chest, maybe shoulders and neck.
Yeah, let's take a moment just to be with that. Like, notice how that part of the body mm-hmm. has an immediate reaction when you say, "My sexuality is still somehow related to pornography."
Mm-hmm.
Just to feel how that closes up or whatever it does.
Yeah, there's like this like, ugh.
Yeah, exactly. So stay with that. Because what's important, what you're teaching us right here is that, that's what like wanted to happen growing up so many times. Mm. Like it gets like thwarted and stuck in there, like a little container. So see what it's like to let that move right now, if it wants to.
Oh my gosh. Well, I might start vomiting.
It feels like that.
I just ate a nice breakfast.
No, this is good actually. So I want you to use your feet. Put your feet on the ground instead of having them crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Feel that nausea, and you're also pregnant, so let's be careful with that. And just let's let the nausea feel the feet, just like we pendulated before. Can you feel a difference?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what the difference is.
Well, there's definitely like a calmness in my feet, mm-hmm. and an okayness, and feels like tapping into, I guess, spaciousness and acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Right, let that part merge with the disgust or the shame or the nausea for a moment. not force it to, because it has to do it when it wants to, but just kind of introduce them to each other with some pendulation. And just tell me what happens, if anything.
I feel like I start to notice, like, sensation activating in my genitals.
Mm-hmm.
And,
how does the disgust relate to the genitals right now?
Yeah. Well, there's turn-on feeling, which is, like, part of what
this is perfect. So this is perfect. So you're teaching, okay, your body's teaching us right now that overcoupling, right? Mm-hmm. Disgust and turn-on. Mm-hmm. They live together mm-hmm. because of these experiences. Mm-hmm. So let's honor that for a moment.
Okay.
Now, let's feel the turn-on and tell me a sexual situation, like, ideally with David or someone, that feels really rooted in what you called wholesome earlier. That's outside of this experience with Dad.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, so just, you know, just being in bed with my husband and like mm-hmm. kissing and caressing and, mm-hmm. You know, like him touching me or going down on me or anything.
Where do you feel that? Just even pause there.
Well, so like that, when I feel into that, it's like there is pleasure there, but there's not the disgust.
Correct.
Because I love him.
So tell me that. Tell me where the pleasure, the genital pleasure, and then what's happening in the upper body.
Yeah, well. So what I struggle with, I think, is that there is pleasure, and it seems like, I don't know, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself.
No, but, go for it.
Without the element of disgust, mm-hmm. I find it hard to get to climax.
That's right. So stay here.
Yeah.
No further. This is perfect. I want you to explain to us the difference sensationally of that thrill pleasure with the disgust and that softer pleasure,
mm-hmm.
right, with David in that moment. Tell us the difference in your body.
Yeah, it's just like, it's very relaxed with David and, mm-hmm. You know, loving and kind. So there's, it's like there's not that like tension that my body associates with climax. And so the trouble that I run into is I like my mind seems to really want to like access its store of like pornographic memory images that do evoke some like edge of taboo or disgust.
That's right.
In order to climax.
So let's for a minute in your body right now, let's take away the goal of climaxing mm-hmm. and just feel that softness you were talking about in response to genital stimulation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you feel that softness when you just focus there?
My heart into my throat.
Mm. Yeah, nice. Let the body shift however mm-hmm. it wants to.
Yeah, just a general kind of relaxation.
Mm-hmm. And see what it's like, let your head be held, like lay back on the chair for a moment.
Okay.
So you don't have to hold your body up, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And just stay with that for a moment. Literally, you're teaching your body the difference between thrill and fear and how that's tied to climax and like a softness with genital stimulation. And just feel the difference. Let your body kind of catch up to how that feels and see where it goes. Where does that take you?
Well, I notice, perhaps because we're doing this live on a podcast, that I have some self-consciousness. I mean, it's an intense subject, and I mm-hmm. also am, like, conscious of, like, I feel like I could be silent for, like, 10 minutes feeling into that. So yes. That might not be fascinating to listen to.
So why don't we say that? Why don't we give you that that piece? But also just say, like, this is the beginning of the answer to your question.
I love it. Right? I love it.
Like,
and
bathing in the difference between the thrill, shame, disgust turn-on.
Okay.
And that soft, like, not traumatized turn-on.
Okay, so pendulating between them.
That's right.
And that can lead to the integration.
Yes, because what happens is then you'll be making love. And what you'll do is you'll remove climax. Like, you won't even think about it, right? You'll just be, like, practicing the softness. like you've practiced your whole life, like I have, anyone that's been violated sexually in any way, we practice climax with thrill and fear and disgust. That's been our practice. Mm-hmm. So now it's like the other one. And what's so hard, I'm so glad we're talking about this, like, thank you, because people need to hear this. When you come from these backgrounds, what makes it so difficult is the turn on and the amount of climax won't even be close to what it's like with thrill. Mm. It just won't be there. Mm. Because the body, when it comes to sex, like, the climax itself is an adrenalized state. Mm. Like, it's an electric activated state. So if you've already had electricity flowing through you and activation from shame or, like, fear or violence, that is, like, so hyper-arousing to your whole body that your, like, orgasm is huge because it has to transmute all that. Mm. But when the body is soft and it's not so hyper-aroused because it's not, like, a traumatized sexual experience, the orgasm isn't as big because it doesn't have to transmute so much of it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like getting non-binary about the orgasm and how it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah, this is so fascinating. I'm so glad that we talked about it because for some reason my mind couldn't figure out what I should pendulate from. But obviously what you just said makes total sense, that that is the thing that needs to be learned. And it's so interesting just relating it back to, like, the stuff that we've learned from Dr. Robert. I feel like what Luis teaches is about, like, getting directly in touch with the somatic resource in the body, and a lot of what our mentor Dr. Robert teaches is about, like, well, other ways to access resources, but it's like accessing the resource of, like, calmness and acceptance and, like, anyways, it's fascinating.
Well, this conversation.
What do you notice from watching that?
Well, what came to my mind as you were speaking just now, and just this whole conversation about the difference between, like, the arousal of, like, fear, thrill, and the, like, need to transmute all that, making it so intense, and then the, like, less aroused, less charged softness of, like, the orgasm of just, like, sweet, innocent pleasure, really reminds me of so many conversations that I've had with people who are, like, really stuck in suffering and really stuck in, like, the negative and what's wrong and the bad. And, like, that is so fucking sensational.
That's right.
And then they're, like, looking around for, like, what is the analogous high of, like, feeling good, feeling good, feeling good. And, like, why can't I feel so much good as I do feel ugh? And I've just really come to notice that, like, feeling good isn't on that same level of intensity. It's much more open. It's much more relaxed. It's much more peaceful.
Subtle.
It's subtle, exactly. And so I can understand why, like, people literally are addicted to their suffering and misery because it's so arousing. And feeling at peace and healed and whole has a deep, deep satisfying pleasure, but it is not the same state of nervous system somatic arousal.
No, comparatively, it's bland.
Comparatively, it's bland. Exactly. And so there really is, like, a need to allow that you're not doing it wrong. Like, if feeling good doesn't feel as intense,
you're doing it right.
That's exactly.
Right.
Yeah. You're, like, open exactly and you're not as aware of the, like, no and the binariness of, like, my body, my suffering, my no and
it.
The world. You're
it.
Like mixed in with the world and all of its arousing, like, arising happenings, and you're kind of melted and, like, not as in. Oh, who's this? Oh, sorry, I'm receiving an important call. Okay.
What she just said was, like, really important.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when
sorry,
you think about...
Lena's like, no, I need you to stop.
Yeah.
When you think about the merging, like, what she just said was, we were looking at the lake this morning talking about the same thing, about how the staff was saying how good they felt being next to a lake.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we don't know, like, why it feels... And if you look at the lake, its body is bigger than yours.
Mm.
So, like, you dip your toe in it even. It can take everything you're holding because it's bigger than you. It's a bigger container. So, like, that the thing that Layla was just saying was so important because when we're actually separate from each other and, like, blaming and coiling, you said, it's so high sensational because you're alone with all the sensation. When you're merging, everything gets really subtle. And when you've had your whole life, especially in development, with that kind of, like, charge of pain and suffering, you are addicted to the pure bliss sensation of suffering. No one would think this consciously, right?
But that when would you go be to, upsetting.
It would be insane. And it's not like victim blaming. And when you go into the body, you realize it's true. My body is so lit up from my pain that easing or accessing some pleasure is, like, so bland and so calm it actually startles my hypervigilance state. That's like used to being hypervigilant.
Yeah. Oops. That's David's phone going off about something. Yeah. Well, this has been such a wonderful, fascinating conversation. I realize that our little podcast app will cut us off in a few minutes.
So we should say we love you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you all.
Thank you for this wonderful conversation.
Thank you for being with us today. Yes. And, so everybody...
Can I say one thing? Because I had a dream. Just one final thing. I had a dream the night before Mystery School began. And in my dream, it was like a weird... Well, in my dream, I was like really seeing and feeling the like the vacuuming longing for like the pain to be eased and like the sort of like empty inward feeling that like I think a huge number of people walk around with, and like anybody who's involved in healing has things to be healed, and anybody who's like seeking for reunion feels separated, and like that feeling of separation is like a in my dream I had a very somatic experience of like the hungry ghost like searching like empty thing that like sucks things towards it, and I just was like, wow, I feel like our Mystery School helps to suffuse that feeling with wholeness and like cuts out, like it like plugs the drain in a wholesome way so that there's not the like vortex of like need seeking and I was like, how do I turn this into marketing for the Mystery School? I was really somatically feeling like in my body in the dream, like I was in the dream, I was kind of pendulating like between like the people that I was seeing and the feeling that I used to have in myself for years and years of like something's missing, like a panic. It's like a panic. And I was just, and I was pendulating my dream to like my current state. I was like, I don't. And I was just like, this is a balm. Like, I was like, this is the word that came to me in my dream. Was like, the balm has been applied.
There is a balm in Gilead.
There is a balm. And I was just like, I really want for people to have that just like peace. And this conversation making me remember it, because in the dream, I was like aware of my own sort of like relaxed body, and then the experience of these, you know, dream others who of course are also me, but just feeling how like it's peaceful and it's not as electrified and like sensitive and like zoop, zoop. And people were electrocuting each other last night at their little play party, so it's like kind of on my mind that like
well, and the electricity will come. I know we're closing, but like it's always going to come.
There are electric moments of joy.
Of course there are electric moments of joy. Of course.
I'm just saying that lots of people know, like, if you're starved, if you're like, but I don't want to lose that, it's always going to be, someone's going to die, someone's going to hate you, you're going to get a diagnosis,
it's coming. Right, but it doesn't have to live in you, it doesn't have to live in you forever as a, like,
No, that's the binary.
Yeah. Anyway, I was just feeling how, like, there is something to this peace that, like, you can float in and, like, relaxed and be relieved.
So you heard it here, folks. The real news. The good news. And thank you so much, Louise, for joining us. Such a joy to be with you. Yeah. And everybody, you know, please like, subscribe, tell your friends. You can go to my Instagram bio, click the link tree, and sign up for the waiting list for Sleepover Mystery School 2024. It's going to be a grand time. And hope I see you there. And, you know, keep enjoying the apocalypse. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye.